Yo, parish orphans and retrogrades, happy first Adventine week. We're approaching Christmas, but first we have to get through this penitential period of Advent. Listen to this for news as it relates to current events, the strange, perplexing, terrifying world, Catholic world of Pope Francis. La Salette, Akita, the third secret of Fatima, new connections, which insinuate that so-called papal heresy, you know, the so-called can go in one direction or two, but so-called papal heresy, which is a big topic over the last 10 years in the Francis pontificate, might have something very real to do with Marian prophecy in times past. Joining me today, as a many-time guest on the show, is Dr. Edmund Mazza. Dr. Mazza, thanks for being with me today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So, anytime a Catholic says La Salette, Akita, and Fatima in the same sentence, claiming, moreover, that there is a conceptual connection between these three Marian apparitions spanning 2.5 centuries, that I guess more like 2 centuries. You got my attention. Is there something to La Salette, Akita, Fatima that should have our attention snapped in the Francis pontificate?
Absolutely. I was doing research for an Advent course that I'm doing. People go to edmundmazza.com. It's the Third Secret of Fatima and the Francis Church. And I discovered, I'll just cut to the chase and read for you. So, of course, the most famous line from Our Lady of La Salette, or the Secret of La Salette from 1846, is that Rome will lose the faith and become the seat of Antichrist. But there's another line in there, which is mysterious. It says, the church will be eclipsed, the world will be deranged by fear. Now, I have a book coming in the mail today. it's the 1906 French edition of something called The Secret of Melanie. But I'll read you a line from that where the editor, the Abbé Combe, says, I have it from Melanie herself that this line, the church will be eclipsed, is meant in this sense, that one will not know which is the true pope. Is this microphone on?
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. You can drop it now. If that's true, there's all the dispute over the various parts of the La Salette message. But if that's true, it's quite important, no?
Yes. And what's really shocking, and this the rabbit hole here goes deeper and deeper, is that this exact same phrase, the church will be eclipsed, the world will be deranged by fear, appears in a sort of an apocryphal document, very controversial document, that was published by a German news journal in 1963 called News Europa. And when this came out in October of 1963, they claimed to be publishing the full text of the Third Secret of Fatima, which was supposed to come out 3 years earlier in 1960, which of course Pope John the 23rd never did, saying the secret is not for our time. Anyway, in that text, this German text, it says the church will be eclipsed, the world will be deranged by fear. Well, wow. If this is a legit text, then it shows that the same words from La Salette are in the Third Secret of Fatima. And what lends somewhat credibility to this is that various people have said, like Monsignor Luigi Villa, have said that this text that was sent to this leak from the Vatican to News Europa was done by none other than Cardinal Ottaviani, the most orthodox man in the 1960s Vatican, you know, the Ottaviani intervention about the Mass and et cetera.
The CDF chief. Yeah,
precisely. So, and I can read you another line from this News Europa, which people will associate with a different source, and I'll get into that. It says, "This will be a time of great trials for the church. Cardinals will oppose cardinals. Bishops will oppose bishops. Satan will walk in their ranks." Have you ever heard that one before?
I've never heard Satan will rock in their ranks, but I've heard bishops opposing bishops and cardinals cardinals many times associated with Akita. Cardinal Burke is known to quote it often. I'm known to quote it often among yes. other Catholic trads, but I've never heard the Satan will walk in our ranks.
We all know this because it's from Akita, which was 10 years later. Our Lady appeared to Sister Sesagowska in Japan in 1973. And I believe it's her October 1973 message that says that there'll be cardinals opposing cardinals, bishops opposing bishops. And that's not the only phrase from this 1963 purported third secret publication that also appears in the official text of Akita. I'll give you a couple other lines. "The church will be darkened and the world will be deranged by terror." That's the line I quoted you from La Salette and from News Europa. It's also in Akita. And then also, "Fire and smoke will fall from heaven. The survivors will envy the dead." That's straight out of Akita, but it's straight out of this German report from 1963 purporting to be the third secret of Fatima.
So we have the derangement of fear and the question as to the identification of the Pope appearing in three separate alleged purportings of Marian apparitions. Then it would be Akita, La Salette, and Fatima, according to the 1963 German paper. Ed, is that clear?
Has that for a trifecta?
That's a good one. That, and I mean it. Well, more than a good one, it's profound because we simply can be reasonable individuals, you and I and others, all the Catholic right-wing Americans whose names are familiar if we were to populate a list of 20 or 25, who all, almost to the man, have a narrowly tailored personal theory on Pope Francis and how the hell are things this strange and messed up. Pretty much if you take the top 25 American Catholic right-wingers that one listens to, including yourself, including myself, there's pretty much got to be a narrowly tailored perspective on Pope Francis. And if these apparitions are being reported truly, and they've kind of been struck from the record from Akita, La Salette, and Fatima, then so much would be clear, right? Because it would be, well, this is part of Satan's design, counter-providential design, to sow confusion, not only in the world, but in the church. Now, all of a sudden, all of us can come correct, all say 25 of us who have our own theories on what in the hell is going on with Francis, and it makes a lot of sense. Am I wrong in thinking so?
I think you're on target. I mean, we have people like Father Malachi Martin, who publicly said that we may have to face the apostate pope. And he's a person who claimed to have read the third secret. We have Dietrich von Hildebrand and his wife, Dr. Alice von Hildebrand. In the late 60s, they cornered the editor of L'Osservatore Romano. I don't know if you know this story. And they asked him, how come John the 23rd didn't release the third secret a few years ago in 1960? And I forget the guy's name, but the editor told them because it said that there will be apostasy from the top. And even Archbishop Marcel Lefebvre, I found this out in my research for this Advent course I'm doing. Marcel Lefebvre says, we know from apparitions like La Salette and Fatima that the apostasy will start at the top. Does that mean Pope Paul VI? Or does that mean his Secretary of State? I don't know.
Why didn't you start at John the 23rd? Just to be spicy. is it possible? I mean, John the 23rd is the one that Dietrich and Alice were complaining about, suppressing the secret. Didn't Cardinal Ottaviani himself say, oh, we should never release the third secret? I've always heard he did say that.
There is that apocryphal quote that it should be kept in a bottomless pit in the Vatican
Right.
Library, something like that.
Right.
Where ironically, that's where they found the secret of Melanie from La Salette. The late 1990s, some scholar accidentally discovered an edition of the secret of La Salette. But no, we have person after person, and we have a professor, Dolinger. Have you ever heard of him?
Yes.
He
Ingo?
was. He was close friends with Ratzinger, and when the Vatican released the Third Secret in June 2000, Dolinger approached Ratzinger and said, "How come you didn't give it all of us?" Like Mother Angelica said, "I don't think we got it all." Apparently, Ratzinger told Dolinger, "The Third Secret predicts that there is going to be an evil council and changes to the mass." But when this came up in the news, I guess this was reported on 1 Peter 5, must have been 2016, 2017.
I remember the exact article. I
The
remember the exact
Vatican, yeah,
article.
Vatican came out, denied it, right? But Dolinger never, I mean, Dolinger talked to Micah Hixon, and Dolinger said, no, I stand by what I said. Ratzinger told me this, that they didn't release the full Third Secret.
I remember. I mean, this is from the golden age of 1 Peter 5.
Right.
I mean, from when it was conceived to 2017. Man, there were so many dynamite articles, and Skojic just he employed the very best combination of commentary and journalism. And Mike, I'm friends with Micah, and wow, that was amazing. So what we have is a mystery wrapped in an enigma, wrapped in a riddle, because I'll put it this way, among you, Benny Papists, or whatever the new term is, BIP crew, Ed, there are those who come out. There's a number of theories which substantiate the broader claim known as BIP. Benedict was the Pope. It's basically a sedevacante now, after he's died. You have the ones that are more friendly to the legacy of Benedict, holding that essentially he's a hero. Everything he did was 4 or 5 or 6D chess. And they really want to prop up Benedict as just doing everything right. And then you have guys more like yourself that I think have a more realistic view of Benedict, who would say, look, in a pre-Vatican II world, Benedict is a center-left German. Most of his German colleagues, confreres from the German cohort, are radical left, and he's kind of center left, which is the
Yeah,
only
his communio broke from Consilium, the more hardcore guys in the early 70s.
And whether or not I agree with BIP, I do agree with you that Benedict is no like right-wing hero to the church. I've read enough of his writings to know that. I mean, he's basically the first individual to have conceived of the Casper plan to give communion for the divorced and remarried as early as 1972. So I'm definitely on your side on that one.
Right.
What are we to make of the fact, Ed, that so many of the high-ranking officials that are said to be from the right wing, whether we're talking about the goodly Ottaviani, Benedict himself, Gonswein, Mueller. I don't know if Ingo Dollinger is alive or dead, but so many of them kind of float this stuff out there and then take it back, and it will never be ratified upon ratified. What are we to make of this? Like La Salette, the church guarantees the message, but says here's a part that's apocryphal. Akita, the local ordinary says this is real, but the CDF never vouchsafed it. The former is more important than the latter.
Right.
Fatima, we pretty much know this is a tangled mess. The Vatican more or less has admitted through their actions. You got, secret 3A, but not 3B, because the Vatican at various times has admitted there are words of the Virgin in this thing. And in whatever it was, summer of 2000, when they revealed it, there was not one single word of the Virgin.
Right.
So there's an admission with the denial at every level. It's almost like someone is sending us an SOS from behind, you know, from behind an assassin's gun to their head. That's how I feel. What do you make of it all? And the fact that they're saying the Francis Pontificate, if this is the designate of, you know, the direct object of all these claims, will be a time of essentially apostasy.
Yeah. Well, Father Malachi Martin used to refer to this clique in the Vatican as the super force. Father Charles Murr had talked about how his close friend, was it Cardinal, do you remember his name? What, Gagnon, Cardinal Gagnon.
Gagnon, yes, right.
He had a whole dossier about Freemasons in the Vatican. So Benelli, not Benelli, I'm sorry. Benelli was a friend to Charles Murr. The guy who did the changes to the mass, Bonini. So Bonini was a Mason. Another guy, the guy who chose the American bishops, or recommended to the Vatican who they should make bishops. I forget his name. But, and then, of course, Benedict, right? His last thing before stepping to the side was to get three bishops or three cardinals to investigate the Vatican. Do you remember the dossier that he came up with?
Yeah, two binders.
Exactly. Two big, there might even be a picture of Francesco, the two big binders, and Benedetto sitting across from each other. If you're asking me, do I think that there are sinister forces and guns at people's heads, either literally or metaphorically? Oh, yeah, I think it's obvious.
But more than that, do you think, I mean, is this your, because you're a BIP alumnus, you think the last pope we've really had is Benedict? You're committed to this view with what kind of substantial certitude. Do you think that La Salette, in the middle or early half of the 1800s, Fatima Akita, early to late 20th century, are all about Francis?
Oh, yes. I'll do a little shameless promotion here. So in my book, The Third Secret of Fatima and the Synodal Church, Volume 1, Pope Benedict's Resignation, I quote Father Gruner, and Father Gruner was a BIP before he died. He gave an address.
Was?
Yeah. So for those who don't know Father Gruner, I mean, probably most of the people who watch your show know who Father Gruner is, but yeah. He was, for 35 years, the biggest promoter of the full message of Fatima. In other words, that the third secret, 3B, had not been revealed, right. That the consecration of Russia had not been done specifically as Our Lady asked. But right before he died, he gave an address in which he said that, so whatever he, Pope Benedict, was doing on February 11th, he wasn't resigning the papacy. That's the mystery which will be explained by the third secret. Our Lady of Fatima will explain it to you in those 25 lines that have not been revealed. So that would make sense if La Salette, if that phrase, the church will be eclipsed and the world will be deranged by fear, as the Abbe Combe says, Melanie told me that that means we don't know who the true pope is. So La Salette would seem to connect with what Father Gruner is alleging about the third secret. And of course, the part of the third secret they did reveal has that strange line, we saw a bishop dressed in white. We had the idea he was the Holy Father.
Right.
And then Bergoglio comes out and claims to be the bishop dressed in white. You remember that?
Yes, 2020 or something like that, 2019. He made some weird claim about it. Right?
Yeah.
Look, so let me say this, because I'm always preaching epistemic humility. I don't know what's going on, but I don't know what's going on. But at the same time, I'll say this. None of this stuff, if you turn out to be wrong, I will not say, oh man, 2021, 22, 23, guys like Mazza had these stupid theories. I will not say that.
Thank
I will
you.
never say that. I will never say that, whether you're wrong or right. I'm one of these guys that'll tell you, hey, I called this right. I'll tell you when I called such and such wrong. And I'll tell you when I flat don't know. Whether or not you turn out to be wrong or right, Ed,
right,
this is not a stretch. This is a,
thank you.
If you turn out to be wrong, it'll be like, wow. I think geologists call it discordant evolution, or dissonant evolution, or something like that, where two species look very similar, but aren't genetically related. Evolutionary biologists, or something, geologists, people that deal in very, very, very big swaths of time. You will have been wrong, if you're wrong, only by not lying to yourself, by not stretching facts, right, by not being a tendentious scholar. If you turn out to be right, which I've never claimed is an impossibility, I've never said, oh, I know this is so stupid, I know this is wrong, then it'll be like, oh yeah. Later it'll be like the 3D hologram image that pops out at you if you look at it long enough that you can't unsee once you saw it. It'll be like, right, oh yeah, La Salette, Akita, Fatima.
There's a data set, right? There's a data set out there of bizarre stuff. Like, just a quick example. So in June of 2016, Ganswein does an interview with Paul Bada, and he says the following, and this was 2016 that he's talking, right? Listen to this. He says, now we have had for 3 years, two popes. And I have the impression that the reality that I perceive is covered by what I said. And you talk about 1 Peter 5, they published that and they were as confused as anybody. You've got the right hand of Ratzinger, his right hand and his caretaker, 3 years after he resigned, saying, yeah, for the past 3 years, we've had two popes.
That's weird. Wait. So everyone out there, Parish Orphans Retrogrades.
And I'm the crazy one, right?
Yeah, exactly. No, rats, Benedict Emeritus, Superfly, whatever we're supposed to call him after 2013. What he didn't want to be called ex-pope, or he wanted to be called Pope Emeritus. So this is not Ganswein being wacky, or
exactly,
Ed Mazza being wacky, or of the BIP people being wacky. I don't claim any substantial certitude as to what's going on. This is none of the following parties being wacky. This is literally what Benedict, who invented a way for there to be two popes, constantly said. And his friends like Dollinger, who Mazza cited earlier, said he'd wanted to do this for decades, the double pope thing. What?
Or Peter Sewald, his old friend Peter Sewald, right, who interviewed him dozens of times and did three books on him. In 2016, he publishes the book, Last Testament, in his own words.
Yep.
And Sewald asks him point blank, is a slowdown in the ability to perform reason enough to climb down from the chair of Peter? Now, let's stop for a second. Isn't that exactly what Benedict said in his declaration, right, on February 11th?
What?
I no longer have the energies, you know, to be Pope. I no longer have, you know, the vigor, right? So, Sewald says, is a slowdown in the ability to perform reason enough to climb down from the chair of Peter? So, what should Benedict say? Yes, right? Yeah. No, he doesn't say that. He says, one can make that accusation, but it would be a functional misunderstanding. The follower of Peter, right, i.e. the Pope, is not merely bound to a function. The office enters into your very being. So in this regard, fulfilling a function is not the only criterion for being Pope. End quote. So you can step down from the function, but still be a successor of Peter. And I'm the crazy one. He says this, and this is his own words to Sewald.
Yeah.
So, okay. Anyways,
Go ahead.
So, people like myself, Ann Barnhard, and others would say, look, he committed substantial error because the object of his resignation, the papacy, was not understood properly by his intellect. This is an offense not just against Canon 188 of the canon law, but it's an offense against natural law. If your intellect presents you with erroneous information and your will chooses a decision of consent or not consent based on this erroneous information, that's not a free act. And according to canon law, it's got to be a free act. According to natural law, it's got to be a free act. So that's my argument. My argument is, if this truly is an erroneous thing, like if you really can't have a praying pope, like a godfather pope, and then an active pope, if that's a metaphysical impossibility, then Ratzinger committed substantial error, and he was the pope up until he died last year. That's the idea.
Yeah, and then but then you have to check, okay, what are the juridical consequences? You got to check maladies, which you're pretty compelling there that this was a malady in his reasoning. But you also have to check juridical remedies, and that's where I'm just like, okay, this is, I think, the wackiest that you get. But what I'm willing to say to my audience who values to some extent my esteem, my opinion on these things, is that aside from that, I don't feel that you're on any shaky ground when you're like, wow, Benedict has wanted to do this for a long time. We don't know why, aside from the fact that he is a German, which is a disease of the mind. They're very smart, but German Catholics have a disease of the mind. And Joseph Cardinal Ratzinger nor Benedict XVI had an immunity to the disease. Sorry, guys. He had wacky ideas. He told same Peter Siebold in Last Will and Testament, we stopped doing Thomistic manual theology philosophy because we were bored by it. Theology is not supposed to be fun, right? Like these Catholic dorks out there, I don't do Catholic theology. I'm a Catholic Thomistic philosopher. You do it because it matters. It's a viable enterprise and an important enterprise because it matters, not because it's fun. So I think you're on solid ground saying—
And you know who backs you up, Tim? Francis himself backs you up. I have a quote from Francis from 2013, 2015, and he says, for some theologians, the papacy is a sacrament. The Germans are very creative in this.
Wow. That's interesting.
The idea being that if it is a sacrament, you never lose it, even if you give up the active administration of it.
Right.
Right. So even Bergoglio, of all people, confirms, well, he says, I don't believe that personally. But yeah, the Germans are very creative in all these things. So even he confirms what you're saying about these, you know, 1970s Nouvelle Theologie German theologians.
Bishop of the Retrogrades, I want to remind you to like, and please, for the love of Pete, subscribe to this channel. We're like 80% of common viewers unsubscribe. Please do it right now. Also, if you want to support the channel, it's not Patreon. I got kicked off of there for sticking to my guns. It's Subscribestar and Locals, also attached to this video. If you want to help yourself, then you need to get out of your blue state, get to a red state, go to realestateforlife.org. That's most important coming up upon an election year in a month time. Finally, go to, what is it, edmaza.com, edmundmaza.com?
Yes, edmundmaza.com.
And check out this new Fatima course Ed is offering. You want to call that out, Ed?
Yeah. We're for the four Sundays of Advent, and if you can't make it live, I send you the video. We're going to go do a deep dive on the third secret, everything that we can know about the third secret based on the leaks and based on, you know, these statements that have come out, and how it applies to Francis and the Synodal Church. So we're very excited about it. And also, I'm very excited. We didn't even talk about this yet. As of this morning, His Excellency Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano has sent me a video of himself that we're going to present at a conference this Saturday. The title of the conference is the Pope Catholic? And he's going to be the keynote speaker, but it's going to be a recording. So if folks go to edmundmaza.com, they can Or if they email me, edmundmazza@gmail.com, I will send you a link. It's a free online conference. And it's not just Vigano. We're going to have Father Altman, another controversial person, myself, Anne Barnhart, Liz Yore from LifeSite, as well as Father Kramer. And did I leave anybody out? No, I think that's everybody.
Wow. Are they all Benedict is Pope people at this point, Ed?
Well, that's the interesting thing. So let me read to you what the purpose of the conference is. I'll just read it from my website. So, like you said before about evolution and the two different species that are not directly related but the same or something.
No, but
Basically, various speakers at Is the Pope Catholic Conference will consider the possibility of one, the invalidity of Pope Benedict's resignation, or two, the invalidity of Bergoglio's acceptance of the papacy. And this is a new thing. Well, it's not exactly new, but this is what Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano is promoting and wants to have a discussion about. And he was not allowed to have a discussion by Michael Mott at the Catholic Identity Conference that happened back in late September, early October. And then the third thing that we're going to investigate, and maybe we'll talk about this today, is Bergoglio's loss of office due to public material, if not formal, heresy. So you've got different speakers who have different ideas. So Anne Barnhart and myself and Father Kramer would claim that he violated Canon 188, which says that a resignation made out of substantial error is invalid by the law itself. Or you've got His Excellency Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano, who says that he did not accept the papacy in terms of his intention. It's like a marriage, right? If you're entering marriage, you have to have the intention to do what married people do, right? If you,
interesting.
otherwise, that's grounds for a classical, not a modern annulment, but a classical annulment, right? And then thirdly, people like Father Altman would argue that he's lost the office because he's just not Catholic. He's a heretic.
Yeah, the middle one's particularly interesting. We don't have to get all into the middle one. I just want to say this to my audience. The middle one's particularly interesting because I've been doing a lot of research into the embarrassing sham of the American Church's annulments explosion starting in the year 1971. The USCCB, or whatever it was called then, issued new norms that made it essentially impossible for a Catholic marriage not to be annullable. They made it nullity proof, nullity denial proof. So pretty much everyone's marriage is, if not void, at least voidable. Two important distinctions in law: void and voidable. Francis has quietly, before the 2014 synod, where he was dealing with communion for divorces, civilly remarried, who couldn't get annulments, which is almost no one, he applied more or less the 1971 American standards that would make it virtually impossible for people to be denied an annulment, more or less impossible. And since then, he said several times that basically the vast majority of marriages in the world, which would justify why he applied the American standards to all the world, basically all the marriages are at least voidable, if not already void. Okay, so that's all offensively stupid and offensively anti-Catholic. And it's all stuff that's under Francis's belt, along with the 2014-2015 synods and Amoris Laetitia, what he did for the very few freaks that couldn't get annulments. He's going to let them take communion anyway. Put all that to the side for a second. I've talked a lot about that the last 3 weeks. Look at the only ready-made, narrowly tailored analogy between the retroactivity of mental state or other conditions, but mostly mental state, and taking the office of spouse as part of the sacrament of matrimony, and the mental state, the mens rea requisite or other conditions requisite for taking the office of pontiff. There's not really anything else in Catholic life or day-to-day life where you say, we thought this was a spouse, we thought this was a pope, but we went back and we inspected the mental state or some other fringe conditions that actually showed that it was never valid to begin with. This was an anti-spouse, a fake spouse. You were never married. You have a declaration of nullity. Or this was a fake pope, never pope to begin with. There's a declaration of nullity called anti-pope. There's not much else that submits itself. And the funny thing that I've been pointing out, Ed, is irrespective of Benedict as pope, who's right, who's wrong, it's funny that Francis wanted to say, this is a direct quote, the vast majority, the Vatican walked it back more toward half of all world marriages are null and void. What if we applied the exact same scrutiny to popes? Then we'd say, well, if half or more of all the pontificates were void, then no one would doubt that his is one of them, because he's definitely in the worst half of them. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
What do you say about that?
Well, I'm trying to find real quick a quote from Bergoglio himself where he says about the marriages. He gave a quote in 2016, which people have forgotten about, where he said that part that you just said. And then he also said about baptized cohabitating fornicators. Right, you know what I'm talking about?
Remember this one. Yep.
He said, I know these people. I'm paraphrasing because I couldn't find the exact quote. I know these people. They have the grace of matrimony in many cases. You remember that?
I remember. I just looked at it last week. Yeah, I don't have it handy, but I remember that.
Yeah.
He said that about fornicators, cohabitors. He's unbelievable. I mean, this is what I always say. With Vatican II, you peak and it's not quite as bad as you heard from trads. It's bad, but the documents are definitely, you don't have to stretch much to be like, well, there is an Orthodox meaning here. Francis, it is not the same. You look at what Francis said, and it's worse than even the most extreme trad is out there reporting. It's actually worse. And you're like, that's weird. No one's even reporting on this.
And Tim,
yeah.
Okay. I'll tell you a funny story real quick. I won't say his name, but I'm having a dialogue with one of the guys at Catholic Answers. And this is what he threw at me. How am I supposed to believe that a small percentage of humanity, like yourself, right, are right, and the rest of humanity is wrong about Francis being pope? Right. I mean, everybody thinks he's pope, all Catholics, all world leaders, everybody, even Protestants. Right. Well, I could turn around and say the whole world thinks that Melania Trump is President Trump's wife.
True.
But she's not.
True.
Say what? Yeah, I'm right. Right. Am I talk about it?
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Catholic Answers guy. The whole freaking world thinks that, I don't know, Catherine of Aragon was Henry VIII's wife. Now, the church stood firm there. They didn't grant an annulment. But in 1971, if old Henry VIII was American, guess what? In most dioceses in America, 0%, including Henry VIII, of requested annulments would be denied. Meaning, guess what? That most people who go to a wedding, Catholic Answers guy, whoever it is, everyone there is like, okay, this is a real wedding. And everyone thinks so for 10 years as this couple who's married produces child after child after child. Maybe they stay together another 10 years. And yet after 20 years and 4 or 5 kids, all the world thought they were married. Oh, and it turns out they weren't. Well, that seems to be a problem too. And here's the thing. If we look at the culpable mens rea, the requisite mental conditions for attenuating a marriage or a pontificate to the point of saying it never existed, there's a much stronger case for basically all the annulled marriages I've ever heard about being real marriages than for Francis being Pope. And that's not even me being BIP. I'm just kind of in between on that one. What would he say to that? All the world, particularly those blessed souls that got called to a marriage, watch them take the vows, which pretty much covers, according to natural law, all of the things you need both spouses to have heard just one time. Death do you part, you're going to have kids, you're going to be fruitful and multiply, all the stuff in the readings and then the oath that should pretty much in 999,999 out of a million cases mean you heard enough to have a real marriage. You can't say the same thing about Francis, guy. Not thank you, Ed, but
no, thank you. I appreciate that. And we don't have to get into it now, but on Saturday, I'm going to read for everybody the oath that popes used to have to take, very similar to a marriage oath. Are you familiar with that one?
No, I'm not. I'd love to have it though, because I've been doing lots of.
I will send it to you, and I'll read it then. We don't have. It's up to you if you wanted me to read anything now. But so anyway, that's why we're having this conference on Saturday, is because there's a lot of overlap between the people who think that Bergoglio is an anti-pope because Benedict never resigned properly, or he's an anti-pope because he didn't accept himself the papacy properly, his mens rea, or because he's a flaming heretic, and heretics can't hold office in the church. They lose their office. But that's a big brouhaha in itself. But anyway,
didn't you say only one out of like 160 theologians over the last term of years affirms that a heretic can still be pope? I don't know how you came up with it. Yeah.
Thank you for raising that, Tim. Real quick, Bishop Schneider, he's a good bishop. I don't know why he's doing this, but he's going around. And in September at 1 Peter 5, they published his letter where he says that even if the pope is a heretic, number one, he doesn't lose the office ipso facto. And number two, there's no body within the church that can, kick him out, dethrone him. The problem with Bishop Schneider's opinion is that only one theologian in the last 1,000 years supports him on this. Some obscure 19th century theologian, Marie-Dominique Bouy. So only one out of 136 theologians supports that view. In fact, doctor of the church, Saint Robert Bellarmine, who was basically the source for Vatican I, right, when they said that, when they defined papal infallibility, he says that Schneider's opinion is exceedingly improbable.
Yeah.
So I wanted to do some myth busting today and at the conference on Saturday. And that's a myth, I think, that needs to be exploded. Another myth that needs to be exploded is Bishop Schneider says that we can't question a universally and generally accepted pope. And and he says, even if there was a problem with the election, it's healed in the root after the fact by his universal acceptance by the vast majority of bishops and cardinals. So even if it was an illegal election and he really wasn't supposed to become pope, the very fact that the whole world accepts him as pope makes him pope retroactively. My answer to that is that maybe that's what happens when the previous pope is dead and buried. But when the previous pope is still alive and kicking, this universal peaceful acceptance thing does not work. Now, this has been promoted for years by the former Freemason John Salza, and now Schneider's picked it up and is spreading it around. And I got to let me just cite a quick historical fact. In 1378, in April, the cardinals chose Urban VI as pope.
Right.
But he was a difficult person. And in September, they all got together and they chose Clement VII as pope. Now, this election was illegal because the pope is still there. Urban VI was still in Rome, right? So, and this was universal acceptance by the entire College of Cardinals of this new guy.
Right.
So according to this theory, he should be the new legit pope, even if his election was illegit.
The first Avignon pope. The first Avignon.
Yes, exactly. So an historical fact trumps a theological theory, at least when you have a case where the previous pope is still alive.
Right.
Another thing Schneider says, he says no one has the right to consider or declare a generally accepted pope an anti-pope. But right. I'm going to talk about this on Saturday. Catherine of Siena, doctor of the church, unlettered lay woman, defied the entire College of Cardinals and said Clement VII is an anti-pope. You cardinals appointed the devil to be a pope. He's a devil. And you all deserve to be tortured. So Again, historical fact contradicts these highfalutin theories, at least in certain cases.
But people, look, there's something dangerous we're flirting with here. And it's the fact that when you produce content, you're producing it for everyone, right? For IQ 90s, for IQ 100s, 110s, 120s. I'm trying to say this gingerly. There are people who are IQ 90 that would receive this interlocution without being able to process it. If you said, how would you feel, Mr. IQ 90 guy, if you didn't eat breakfast this morning? And they're like, they can't process it. Or maybe it's IQ 85. I don't know. That you're like, no. How would you feel if you hadn't eaten breakfast this morning? But I did eat breakfast this morning. I feel fine. No, let me say it one more time, Mr. Thompson, for Simpsons fans. How would you feel if you didn't? And they can't get it. All I'm saying is, here are a bunch of all you're really saying, but I'm intoning it myself right now, because epistemic humility doesn't mean we have to block out like the Husserlian epoche what the implications would be if you are right. How would you guys feel if all these historical facts, Avignon papacy, all of the Marian apparition, all the strangeness of Benedict's resignation the day before the Vatican, he resigns, the Vatican loses its banking status in Europe, all of the many, many weirdnesses of the Francis pontificate, or if Ed's right, pontificate, whatever it is, how would you feel if all that could be explained rather cleanly by one of the three main strains of BIP being flirted about, or one of the three main strains of Francis as an antipope? I'm not saying it is. I'm right. Just saying it's all so clean that way, and it's not the biggest stretch of your life or my life, Parish Orphans and Retro. It's not a stretcher like, yeah, how would you feel if your fat, slow son played in the NBA? That's a stretch, because your son's fat and slow. That would be many mental leaps. This is not so many mental leaps. Stuff could really make sense with an anti-papacy here. And we've had 30 to 35. We're due for one. Well, about 1.5 per century. Can you guys do averaging? I'm not saying I'm on your side, Ed. I'm saying
right.
It's really up in the air. And there's so much that weighs against Francis. And by the way, last comment, then you respond to it, Ed. There is much more circular squarage, circular orthogonality, stuff that I don't know how we square after Francis dies, to be dealt with if he was Pope. There's much more stuff that I don't know how the theologians are going to get around it, because he's had so many material heresies that you're like, well, what do you do with it? It would be easier. I'm not saying this makes it true. I'm saying it would be easier for theologians later, cleaner, if Francis just wasn't. So I don't think guys like you are stretching much. Have I said that two or three times already? What do you say?
Well, I thank you for your kindness and just openness to rationality here, looking at it just purely logically. Two things I wanted to say. One is, last week you had Eric Ibarra and Classical Theist. I had one slight critique of Classical Theist, and it's not just him, it's a bunch of people. They don't want to read anything by Bergoglio or a statement by Bergoglio. They don't want to read it in a bad light. They always want to give it the most charitable reading possible. But I have a line from St. Thomas Aquinas that says that no, we're no longer bound to read Bergoglio in the most charitable light. Aquinas says, now no man ought to despise or in any way injure another man without urgent cause, unless we have evident indications of a person's wickedness. We ought to deem him good by interpreting for the best whatever is doubtful about him. Tim, based on all the shows that you've done and other people have done, wickedness, let me count the ways.
Yeah, 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 yeah. I agree. No, so, you're right. Oh, but you can't say that about a pope. What do you mean? You said it, Classical Theist, very good dude. He said it about several dead popes. He said it about several dead popes. He was more quick to count the ways that several dead popes were wicked. So that means that he's got this chronological bias built in. It's a filter. It's coloring everything he's saying. I'm like, just because a pope can't be deposed by myself or Mr. Dr. Mazza here, doesn't mean we can't reason using the three real acts that our intellect is supposed to render. He's still as evil as he is. How would you feel if you didn't have breakfast this morning, guys? Just answer the call. I'd be hungry. How would you feel if all of these stories that the media has produced on Pope Francis, which all turned out to be true, if they were secular left media? The one thing that the secular left media covers better than anything is Pope Francis. They're truer than the Catholic media, who tend to lie in favor of Francis. How would you feel if all the stories were true? A lot of these young guys don't even know what all of the stories means. Right. They forget everything before 2020, or they never heard it. How would you feel? Well, I would feel like that's a pretty wicked guy. Well, guess what? It all got verified. So it's a wicked guy with wicked intent that's pretty demonstrable. Now we have to do something with that, because he, and even myself, by preponderance of the evidence, still are claiming he's Pope. We have to do something with that. We have to stick it somewhere.
Yeah.
Now, this brings up a quotation from a 9th century Pope. Was it Adrian II?
He was a very interesting Pope. He'd be crossing St. Peter's Square and they'd yell, "Yo, Adrian!"
Yeah, "Yo, Adrian."
My attempt at humor.
Yeah, yeah.
So he held a council in the year 869 in Rome, and then his words expressed at that council were repeated at Constantinople IV, which is an ecumenical council of the church. Now, this gets back to a question that you've raised several times, Tim. How do we interpret Lumen Gentium 25? How do we square that with Bergoglio, right? And my, you know, we talked privately. I suggested that this quote from Pope Adrian might help us to see that Constantinople IV trumps Lumen Gentium 25. And the short version of it goes like this. Pope Honorius was anathematized, accused of heresy. The only offense where inferiors have the right to resist the initiatives of their superiors are free to reject their false opinions.
Interesting. Very interesting. Now, there's a chronological exigency nestled like a canker at the heart of that quotation. Do they mean before the pronouncement by the church? Because heresy is pretty easy to spot. That's my only question.
I'm glad you raised that, because you're right on the money by raising that particular question. For example, Salza claims that you could be a public you could be a public heretical pope, but you don't lose your office unless you join the Jehovah's Witnesses or the cardinals get together and hold it. What's the word called? An incomplete council and get rid of you. But you don't lose it by yourself. That goes against what Pope Innocent III teaches. Let's see if I can find it. Innocent III was the pope who approved the Franciscan order. He's one of the most famous popes of the Middle Ages.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically says that the pope is already judged before the church judges him. Does that make sense?
Sure.
That God has already judged him. Let me give you the quote, and this is from around the year 1200. The Roman Church can dismiss the Roman pontiff only because of fornication, not carnal, but spiritual fornication. This fornication is the sin of heresy. Whoever does not believe is already condemned, put out of office. And then he goes on to say something interesting. He says, since the Roman pontiff has no other Lord than God, then who can throw him out or trample him underfoot, no matter how much like the salt, he loses its savor. And then he concludes by saying, nevertheless, he should not mistakenly flatter himself, for the less he is judged by man, the more he is judged by God. I say less, because he can be judged by men, or rather, he can shown to be already judged if he clearly loses his savor to heresy, since he who does not believe is already judged. Does that make sense?
It makes sense, though it presents all kinds of verification problems in a religion based on A, magisterium, and B, obedience, you know, actively and passively. What the hell are we supposed to do with that? Like, assuming that that applies as a hypothetical, for the sake of argument, arguendo, to Francis for half a minute, what do we do with it?
Well, I can give you another quote. This is from St. Robert Bellarmine. This is very controversial, so everybody pay strict attention to this.
Put on your big boy pants, everyone.
The Roman clergy, stripping Liberius, so we're talking about the mid-fourth century here. The Roman clergy, stripping Liberius, went over to Felix. Felix began to be the true pontiff. For although Liberius was not a heretic, nevertheless, he was considered one on account of the peace he made with the Arians. And by that presumption, the pontificate could rightly be taken from him. And here's the kicker. For men are not bound or able to read hearts. But when they see that someone is a heretic by his external works, they judge him to be a heretic, pure and simple, and condemn him as a heretic, end quote.
Wow. Francis better hope Bellarmine's wrong. Because, I mean, I've done videos on like 101 heretical or apostatizing things that Francis has clearly signaled. 101, and that was like years ago. So if Bellarmine's right, then Francis is SOL. Maybe he's not right. Again, because I can reason hypothetically.
Sure.
Look, just help me make sense of this. I want to do like Saruman at the Council of Elders in the Hobbit movies. So what do we really have here? We have Akita, allegedly, Akita, La Salette, and Fatima intimating that apostasy causes confusion and horror and will do so sometime in the near future from the very top, maybe meaning a pontificate. Number two, we have a pontiff who in almost every conceivable way looks like an apostate. Notice how I'm steering clear of the H word. He looks like an apostate. He just looks like he's abandoned the faith, maybe never had it. I don't know. Number three, we have a worldwide cheering section for Francis, even including some right-wing Catholics, saying, well, the fact that he has us cheering simply out of obedience, which we're doing simply because we think we have to be obedient, that ipso facto ratifies the pontificate. Well, that can't be right. So what do we make of that? It can't be that he took the office and it was, again, assuming that Ed Mauss is right, which I don't day-to-day. I'm just entertaining your views. If you're right, and he took the office under presumed, under erroneous mens rea or other conditions, which would invalidate the pontificate, it does not make any sense to say that it can later be ratified, even though it wasn't ratified by cardinals in the proper sense or by the pontiff himself. And it would also make I don't even want to say the word, but a kind of liar out of Our Lady if she was trying to insinuate what she is with Akita, La Salette, and Fatima. That's three apparitions. She seems to be repeating herself. If it's not Francis, then who? That would mean it's coming. This pontificate is coming in the near future after him. How could we have a pontificate that looks more like an apostate than Francis?
And you're right, Tim. And the data set gets even, we can even pile on top. according to the prophecy of Malachi, which is not just something that, conspiracy theorists get into. Joseph Ratzinger himself discussed the prophecy of Malachi, which lists all the popes until the end of the time or the end of the world, however you want to interpret that. And guess what? Benedict was the penultimate pope. So it all fits. I mean, however you want to look at it, whether it's La Salette, Fatima, Akita, just the stuff that Bergoglio does, or even some obscure things like the prophecy of Malachi. Or Garabrandel. Garabrandel says, was it Conchita in the late 60s said that Our Lady told her that there's only going to be three more popes. Do you remember that?
Yeah, and for the record, I'm off Garabandal for
Oh,
reasons viewers will recognize, but go
sure.
ahead. Yeah,
J
I'm
just
off
as
that.
a again a hypothetical possibility, right? Because
Which
as
is
like,
concomitant, which is if it, again, I could be hypothetical. If it's true, I used to place over the beginning of the summer, I placed a lot more
sure.
faith in it. But if it were true, I would say it's highly concomitant with all of this other stuff. Yes.
Yeah, because she said there's only three popes left, and that would be Paul VI, John Paul I, and John Paul II. But then she said John Paul I didn't quite count because he only ruled for 33 days. Well, that would be Benedict XVI. So, I mean,
Which is weird. It's we.
yeah.
I mean, she just seems like she's fudging in every way.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that
Sure.
everything else here is false. It just means she's maybe she was reading what we're reading and kind of just making a smart person's prediction. But yeah, why would John Paul I not count? Like, oh, it's got to be at least 2 month pontificate. He was only 1 month and 3 days. It's stupid, but whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then even scripture, I mean, it depends how deep we want to go with this, Tim, but St. Paul in his letter to the Thessalonians, I guess it's 2 Thessalonians, he speaks about the catechon. You've
Yeah.
probably heard about that, right? Vigano talked
Yep.
about it, other people have talked about it.
Yep.
So talking about the coming of the Antichrist, he says that and what is restraining him, meaning, the forces of Antichrist, so that he may be revealed in his time. For the mystery of lawlessness is already at work. Only he who now restrains it will do so until he is out of the way.
Right.
Now, saints and scholars for 2,000 years have been wondering, who is this in Greek katakon? Who is this restrainer?
Restrainer. Yeah.
Because Paul, in the original Greek, in one sentence, he refers to it as a what, and then in another sentence, he refers to it as a who, which is kind of interesting because none other than Joseph Ratzinger, in one of his addresses, referred to the Pope and the Pope's confession of faith that makes him the Pope as a what, and then also as a who.
Right.
Who holds back the forces of darkness? Don't know if I got the exact quote, but so some people have speculated that perhaps St. Paul was referring to the papacy as what holds back or restrains the time of Antichrist. And Soci has talked about this, and Agamben, other Italian authors have talked about this. So that's another concomitant thing, right, going on.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well,
I
you
mean, because
what are
Bergoglio has gotten worse since Ratzinger died. I think we can all agree. It's kind of like the leash is off now.
Yeah, I just think it's another topic. I've talked about this with my friend Joshua Charles. I feel like that puts one, that being to identify Benedict 16 as the catechon, puts one squarely on the side of the lionizers of Big 16. And I'm not in that camp. I mean, maybe it doesn't mean he has to be like saintly or even super Orthodox, because I don't really believe Benedict the 16th was either.
Right.
But I don't believe he was an apostate, which is a big compliment for one of the German prelates. But yeah, for him to be I don't know what he would have been doing to hold back any forces of darkness. He appears to be through a very weak defender of tradition, and not I don't really think anyone on the other side of the tracks, the bad guys, were really that scared of him, even though the Sankt Gallen Mafia didn't want him to be Pope. So I don't know. That's one for a future show.
Sure.
Can you give us a give to an audience of people that are more like me that are still at least, you know, 55-45 favoring Francis is Pope. Give us a parting shot, and we'll call that a day. Ed.
Thank you. Thank you, Tim. Well, all I can say is even if you're skeptical, I mean, the conference is free. You can hear me. You can hear Ann Barnhart, Father Altman, Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano. I mean, this is the guy who broke it all 5 years ago in the summer of 2018, right? He's got an interesting theory that makes sense about, you know, intention, mens rea. And so, you know, come and listen with an open mind. There's a lot of evidence that, I mean, some of the stuff we've been talking about today, I don't think people have heard about it before, right? So you can't really make up your mind unless you've heard all of the data that's out there. So that's what I would just say. I would say that, and I don't want to disparage prayer. We need not just reason, but we need to sustain this by prayer. We need prayer, penance, and atonement. We should be saying extra rosaries for Francis. I mean, I'm guilty of that myself. So I need to start doing that myself. So if this, you know, really is an anti-pope situation.
Go ahead, Ed. I'm sorry.
If it really is an anti-pope situation, well then it's like one of those, you know, there's the thing on the door on the wall that says in case of emergency, break glass.
Right. Right.
That's what we got to do right now, and whip out the rosaries and pray like there's no tomorrow.
One thing I will close with myself. Thanks for joining me today, Ed. I'll have you call out your summit and your website and your class one more time in a second. But I have been praying extra for Pope Francis. I realize I have been pretty much univocally, meaning with one voice, never really faltering, opposing at least the teachings coming out of this pontificate, because they're pretty clearly materially heretical, at least. But I do pray for him. And I do the morning offering prayer. I bought every member of my family a morning offering prayer card, but I had to select one of the morning offerings that did not include the intentions of the Pope. Yes. I want to pray for the Pope, but I can't pray for his intentions. That's very line item ideologically specific and anathema to faithful Catholics. It really is. It's not just the secular left media, but I do want to tell all of you out there, pray for Pope Francis. Pray for, if nothing else, you can relate to him on this basis. Ed and I were discussing health concerns before we went on. He said he's very, very afraid of physical pain. He's in a lot now, and it's got to be a scary thing for anyone. Particularly, he's already specified that. So pray for him on a human level there. Pray for him also on a human level that maybe he could convert to the true teachings of the church, whether he is or not, is not a formal heretic. And pray for him because he's coming to the end of his life. None of us know where we're at with respect to it. And he is, by all appearances, now our Pope at this point. So I've been increasing my prayers for the 87-year-old pontiff, though, you know, maybe I'm just, maybe it'll turn out the BIP people were right and all of us were wrong. That wouldn't shock me as much as some stuff I've been wrong about over the last two decades. And I'll give you the very parting shot, call out your call signs, and then let's get out of here.
Yes. If folks go to edmundmaza.com, they can sign up for the Advent course, the Third Secret of Fatima, and the Francis Church. If they just email me, edmundmaza@gmail.com, I'll register you for free for the conference on Saturday. Is the Pope Catholic with Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano?
Cool. That's a good way to do it. God bless you all, parish orphans and retrogrades, to better days. Maybe we'll see them before the Perugia. Maybe we won't. Either way, it's part of Providence. Deus vult.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.
Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. Amen.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.
Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. Amen.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.
Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. Amen.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.
Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. Amen.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.